Welcome back here on Can't Wait. And while the NBA free agency period has provided us with the best TV and Twitter content of the summer, Hollywood often tries to get into the game here and base its own television shows on sports with mixed results. One of my favorite TV shows ever, Friday Night Lights. It's tangentially about sports. It does not always get the sports stuff completely right. In fact, some of the scenes that are in Friday Night Lights would have to take place on a 180-yard football field to actually happen. But that doesn't matter. But the reason I wanted to talk about sports TV shows is right now HBO is getting back into it. They've got Ballers with Dwayne The Rock Johnson on right now, and they just aired 7 Days in Hell, which is a new comedy take on, like, a parody,
yeah,
of 30 for 30 HBO sports style sports documentaries. And one was successful, the other wasn't, and I think it's gonna show kind of why it's so hard to do this. You've seen 7 Days in Hell, Matt Miller.
Yes.
This was a this starred Andy Samberg, mm-hmm, and Kit Harington, aka, mm-hmm, Jon Snow, and it was a note perfect take on what these HBO documentaries are, because, you know, these guys kind of invented the template,
right,
for this kind of documentary. And why did it work for you?
I mean, there were a couple reasons. One is that, and this is almost always the case for any kind of parody like that, but you have to really know and appreciate the beats of whatever you're parodying inside and out.
And you have to love it.
You have to love it. Yeah, you have to be approaching it not as something to just spoof, but as something that, you know, you have a lot of respect for the form. And because you know the form, you can play with it in a way that sort of subverts the audience expectations. Yeah.
But here's where it gets dark, but we're going to take it darker.
Right, exactly. And that's what differentiates it from the sort of stupid, thoughtless parodies like all the, like, Not Another movies,
yeah,
where it's not really about understanding the beats of those movies. It's just about using the loose structure of the original source material as an excuse to, like, squeeze in terrible jokes.
Just jam in already dated pop culture references. They're not even jokes.
Right, exactly. Whereas in this case, the structure itself is part of the joke. It's part of the atmosphere that they're creating. Because, again, they understand the tone of these. They understand the structure. They understand, as a technical perspective, they understand how to mix in the talking head segments with the archival footage, with, you know, the voiceover narration, and all of that in a way that really makes it feel pretty much indistinguishable from one of those 30 for 30 or HBO sports docs.
And they have kind of an unfair advantage with that because they were able to bring in Jim Lampley,
right,
you know, Serena Williams. You know,
yeah,
they have, like, this stable of people they already have a relationship with,
mm-hmm,
the Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel reporters.
Right.
And it really felt like it could have passed as an HBO documentary, except for all the ridiculous things that happen.
And the other thing that it really did an effective job of lampooning is the idea that these sports documentaries, by their very nature, they take sports very seriously.
Way too seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, it's part of what makes some of them really great, because they can explore stories and nuances that would get lost in the SportsCenter cycle and do it in a way that, you know, affords it the gravity that the topics deserve.
Real human stories.
Yeah, real human stories. But at the end of the day, a lot of these, you know, even though they're looking for the human element, they're still about a bunch of millionaires playing a game with a bunch of other millionaires.
They start reaching.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see something like Hoop Dreams, which is actually perfect.
Yeah.
And somebody that's not as talented as Steve James or something will see that and try to achieve that with a story that doesn't warrant that tone.
Right, exactly.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. You see that all the time with sports. And honestly, and it just goes right back to where we call this show sports and nonsense, when the sports is the nonsense, ultimately.
Exactly.
So I think that they did a really nice job of embracing the sort of self-seriousness of those kinds of movies. And then, again, amping it up an extra level like you do with parody by making the stakes even higher in a ridiculous way with, you know, deaths and, you know, true like human tragedies, but played out in a really silly way. It was also just really well done. Like, the acting was great. It was well written. The visual gags were really clever.
Yep.
So it everything that you could get right about a movie like this, it got right. But most importantly, above all else, and this maybe I'll segue into kind of our other example of what doesn't work. It knew what it was, and it kind of understood what the parameters of its potential achievement could be. And knowing what you are, we've talked about this in the NBA draft and with like free agency and in evaluating players, but it's true in movies and in other sort of forms of pop art as well. When you know what you are and understand what your limitations are, then you can play around with those limitations in a meaningful way. And it knew what it was.
Yeah, and right now HBO has a show that doesn't quite know what it is yet in Ballers. Rusty, you haven't seen Ballers.
I haven't.
What do you think Ballers is?
I think it's Dwayne Rock Johnson running around saying, "Can you smell what the Rock's cooking?"
I really don't know.
That said, I know that it's not getting the best critical acclaim right now. Other than that, I'm mostly in the dark about it. I know very, very little about the show.
I've watched all of them. All three. I was telling Matt earlier, Kelly and I had a really serious sit-down conversation this morning, and we were like, I don't think we need to watch Ballers anymore. Because, it's unfair to judge any show this early. I mean, if you were to judge Seinfeld on its first season, it would not be on the air. It just was not.
No, sure. Cheers wasn't a great first season at all.
Shows just had a longer time to find themselves. And this show might find itself, but I think the reason that it got on the air was they said, look, you guys had a lot of success with Entourage. Let's do that. Let's substitute football in for the movie stuff, and everything else will take care of itself. We don't even have to worry about a compelling show. We've got The Rock. He's compelling on his own. Everything else will sort itself out. Why this is a bummer is it feels like such a missed opportunity, because I think Dwayne Johnson's one of the, I don't know where he ranks among the 10 greatest Americans, but he's on the list. He's infinitely compelling. He's so entertaining.
Very compelling person to watch.
And this show is beneath him in every way. There's a couple other actors on the show.
It's unfortunate.
There's the heavyset dude from 8 Mile, you know, in Eminem's Click.
Yeah.
He plays an offensive lineman that retired a couple years early, and now he's now working at a car dealership. And that story has more to say than what they're saying with it. They've got like a brash hotshot receiver, maybe kind of a Deshaun Jackson type, and he's a really good actor too, and there's a lot more with that story than they're bothering to deal with. And they've got a story about like this defensive end who is in line for his first big contract, but he's basically the cash cow for his entire friends and family, and they're all bleeding him dry. And so the only conflict that the show has right now is this guy's friend from childhood is, in quotes, his agent, and is fighting with The Rock every step of the way about what the... Because The Rock works for like a money management firm. He's not an agent. He actually works for Rob Corddry as part of this like hedge fund sort of... Who knows? Who cares? And the guy that's in charge of this is Richard Schiff, who you might know as Toby from The West Wing. Oh. And I love Toby.
Yeah, Toby.
Yeah, so he's got a great role. And there's like you can see the outline of what could be a compelling show. I know they're going to start getting into The Rock's former career, you know, because he was in the show a football player. And now there might be some post-concussion issues. And they might start dealing with some real things and like painkillers and, you know, the stuff that people deal with post-football. What they're interested in making right now is a big party show.
Right.
And it's just not very good. They can course correct. I mean, shows have done that. You've seen shows take an okay first season and turn it around into something better later on. Right now, it's not working. So I want to ask you, I'm going to leave Friday Night Lights out of this discussion because I think it's a show worthy of a separate discussion. I think the acting and storylines and what they were able to accomplish on that show is beyond anything else.
Absolutely.
Sports-wise, Rusty, what's one of your favorite sports shows? Is there a show that dealt with sports in a way that you liked?
Oh, yeah, there have been a few. I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, it's tough. I'm going to give you a couple. First up, Arliss was a really interesting show when it came out on HBO Robert Wall.
That guy's not good, though.
No.
That show was another missed opportunity.
In the end, it really was a missed opportunity, but it made money for HBO, and it was something that really helped them to start launching their series of great TV shows.
7 years on the air?
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Because it's really not, it did not deserve 3 years.
Not with, because Jerry Maguire as a TV show should work. Mm-hmm. And he's not good enough. He just doesn't have the goods.
No, he's kind of like a Kelsey Grammer where he tries to come off as just this squeaky clean. I don't know. I don't.
Very smug.
Yeah, very smug and squeaky clean. And it just didn't really rub me the right way. But it had moments where it was funny and it had moments where it was really insightful. But where I really go is a mini series that ESPN put out, The Bronx is Burning, from 2007.
It was awesome.
That was amazing. John Turturro's in that, yeah. And Oliver Platt, and really brilliantly looks at the summer of 1977 and what's happening with the Yankees and what's happening in the city of New York with a blackout that happened and the looting that transpired, and they're chasing down Sam, the son of Sam. Thank you. Yeah, the serial killer. During that summer as well, it's brilliantly portrayed in one of my favorite Spike Lee movies, Summer of Sam.
Yeah,
but The Bronx is Burning really elevated what a TV series could be, and it's just a mini series. But boy, it really hit on a lot of different fronts, just really brilliantly. And I love watching that. I could watch it over and over.
I think the key word you mentioned there is mini series.
Mm. Yeah,
a lot of what these sports shows run into where it gets tough. Is the way that American TV has been up until very recently with True Detective and Fargo and some of these limited-run British-style shows,
right.
Is they try to generate an idea that can go on forever. And that's really hard to do regardless of the context, but especially difficult in a sports show because athletes have shelf lives.
Right.
And especially if you try to make Friday Night Lights was only the 5 seasons, you know, beyond all odds. But it's hard to contain these shows, you know, or not contain, like the shows want to be contained. They need to have an end. Mm-hmm. And to
they really
try to
do.
Come up with a way to have a sports show that just goes on ad infinitum, it's really, really hard to do.
Yeah. Shows suffer from it all the time. I felt like Dexter went on far too long.
Yep.
I just see it over and over again where they had decided, even Joss Whedon with Buffy, after season 5, he really had planned to stop at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And it's it suffered a little bit when they come back, and so did Dexter, and so did a lot of shows. And so, yeah, the miniseries really works for sports, I think.
Yeah, imagine,
super well.
Imagine if they tried to make The Bronx is Burning for 6 years.
Yeah, and then they show 1978, 1979. No, it would have been terrible.
Oh, done.
It would have been terrible.
So that's a good call.
Yeah.
What do you think, Matt?
You know, my favorite show about sports is not a show that actually really depicts any action on the playing field at all, and it's not really about athletes either. And that's Sports Night, the Aaron Sorkin show.
Okay,
sure.
First of all, I think it's my favorite Aaron Sorkin show, and I think that it contains a lot of the beats that later became sort of self-parody in more recent iterations of Aaron Sorkin. But it was sort of the example of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really liked about it is that I think that it did a pretty earnest job of being able to capture and reflect the tension between the fact that as a society, we do care a lot about sports, and that it's easy to just sort of poo-poo that and to say, like, well, isn't this silly or isn't
right.
it? But the reality is we do care a lot about
sports. And why
sports.
Do we care?
Yeah.
That show really dealt with that in a nice way.
It dealt with why we care about sports. It dealt with what are the limits of, you know, what we can tolerate in our sort of fandom, so to speak, and where are the moments when sports turns into a story that's not really sports but something more about humanity or decency.
It was out ahead of the game on, like, the NFL,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. where people just started to have moral problems with things happening on the field.
Right, absolutely. So in any event, as somebody who relates more to the experience of being a fan than the experience of being a player, I thought that it was a really great and sort of authentic glimpse into what it means to care a lot about sports and to struggle with the inherent contradictions that come along with that. It also structurally was kind of like a sports show in a weird way. Even though it was about making a television show, it had a lot of the same motifs you'd have as if it was about an actual team, because you have, you know, you have your players and in terms of the on-air personality, and you have your coach in terms of Dana, who is the producer, and then you have your sort of GM owner type, mm-hmm. and the managing editor. So in a weird way, it also managed to kind of ape the drama of putting together the like ramshackle sports team trying to be successful kind of idea as well.
A couple points on Sports Night. There's a lot of really enjoyable inside baseball things when you know that it's like kind of a Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann early, like when SportsCenter was like a cultural force.
Mm-hmm.
And Sorkin was really fascinated by the way that those guys, the cult of personality that built up around them,
mm-hmm.
to make a show about that was really smart. And that's another example of a show that you needed to give it a little time for it to find what it was. Because if you go back and watch that thing on DVD, the first half of the first season has a laugh track jammed in.
Yeah. It's so bad with the laugh track.
It's unbearable.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm always hesitant to bail on a show too early. Because if you just judge Sports Night on the first six episodes, it doesn't work at all.
And it's the content is all still really good, but that laugh track, it totally transforms your experience because it's not really a comedy. I mean, it has funny moments in it, but it's a 30-minute dramedy.
Well, it's a Sorkin show.
Yeah, it's a Sorkin show, exactly. And the tone is no different than The West Wing, really.
Right.
It just happens to be 30 minutes instead of an hour. So if you were to take a laugh track and put it over the funny beats from The West Wing, it would similarly make it unwatchable, I think.
Yeah, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about the way Aaron Sorkin writes movies and TV, it's this avalanche of talking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no time. These characters just keep talking.
Right.
If they have to pause for these artificial 5-second stretches for an audience to laugh at what they said, the next person's getting ready to talk again.
Mm-hmm.
So Sports Night, they would have somebody talk in that uninterrupted paragraph style of Aaron Sorkin's,
mm-hmm.
and then have to stop while the crowd laughed, and the other person getting ready for their paragraph of talking would have to ramp back up as if there was no break in conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember when Garfield minus Garfield took the internet by storm?
Right.
And they would pull out all the stuff Garfield said, and it's just this one man's quest through despair and loneliness.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
If you tried to do that to a show like Sports, if you just lifted out those pauses, the Garfield minus Garfield style, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It really was still good content. It was still very interesting.
Show.
It just
and I think that drove Sorkin nuts.
Yeah,
because I think that was it for him in TV for a little while. He went back to writing screenplays, and then didn't get back into TV until the complete train wreck of Studio 60. Studio 60 needs to be its own other thing. I could talk about Studio 60 for hours, but that Sports Night was probably the most successful show that was tangentially about sports, at least from a creative side, because it really touched on a lot of really interesting things.
Yeah, and you know, it also it had a really outstanding cast was able to carry that Sorkin dialogue, which is really hard on actors, you know, because he doesn't write in a naturalistic sort of way, so being able to deliver it in a way that doesn't seem canned and sort of verge on self-parody, I do think is challenging. But there were a lot of folks on Sports Night who then later made appearances on other Sorkin properties, like the folks who later became regulars on West Wing,
mm-hmm.
Folks who were regulars on other sort of prestige dramas, you know, Peter Krause in 6 Feet Under and Josh Charles and The Good Wife, and, you know, Felicity Huffman's done a lot of good work. So there was a lot of good people in that show.
Yeah, it takes a certain amount of ability to jive with what Sorkin forces you to say. There's not every actor is good at it.
Yeah.
And you've seen there have been movies where you can see a handful of people who are really nailing it,
mm-hmm.
and then others where it's like, ooh, this isn't your speed. This isn't your gear. But when I think of like a sports TV show, you know, Friday Night Lights is the one I always come back to. Did you guys ever watch The White Shadow, like on repeats when ESPN Classic would run it?
No, my exposure to The White Shadow is basically just reading Bill Simmons references and articles about it, but I've never
He was obsessed with the thing.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that when ESPN Classic would rerun it before even knowing that Simmons and this group of like now in their 40s people would grow up watching and revering that show. And that was a show that really worked too, because, you know, when you're dealing with high school kids, it got really bad really quickly. But those first couple seasons were phenomenal. And it dealt with like race in a way that TV wasn't dealing with race. And it was like anything else on TV, it's dealing with issues that happen to their characters instead of going out of their way to like pontificate. And it was just, it's a really good show. And there were a couple of athletes, a couple of the actors were really good athletes, which I think helps too. But it's always weird to me that there haven't been more good sports-oriented shows, because I think there would be a way to do like a Bull Durham-style TV show where you don't necessarily have to have a bunch of really convincing baseball players, but it could just be funny and light and minor league baseball. I mean, just all the crazy stuff that goes on around that. I just feel like there have been opportunities to do it, but it's been hard. I haven't seen it done well as often as you think it would be, mm-hmm. with the number of sports fans that exist, number of good TV writers that exist, and people that just kind of get how this is supposed to go. Why do you think it hasn't worked out as often as logic would dictate, Rusty?
I don't know. It's a big question. I guess I don't know that sports really lends itself, and a sports show lends itself to multiple seasons, perhaps. You know, though, having said that, Raw, WWE's Raw show, has gone on for years and years and years.
It's one of the greatest scripted dramas of all time.
It's the longest running television show in history as well.
Yeah.
In terms of a weekly,
right?
You know, original programming.
Like when you compare to, you would have to almost compare it to like Days of Our Lives or any of the long time running daytime soaps, but it's phenomenal.
There you go. It is. It's a phenomenon, and SmackDown does very well as well. You know, I mean, those do well. And
but
those,
then they also mix in these blockbuster movies every quarter.
Right.
You know, each of those pay-per-views is basically a blockbuster film.
Right.
No, that's right.
It's like
that's
the Marvel universe, basically.
Yeah, and you have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that kind of runs in the background.
Right.
And then Captain America comes out this summer.
Right, right.
Well, that's so true. That's so true. That's
I hadn't thought about wrestling in that way, but that's probably the best scripted sports show you could ever create.
And they do that well. I mean, it's not terribly watchable at the moment, I don't think. Everything I read about it, I don't watch so much. I read about it, but everything I read says it's not the most watchable product right now. But they continue to put out a product that does get millions of viewers every week. And so it can be done.
Like anything else, it's got peaks and valleys.
It does.
And the disadvantage that they have is that there's no off season in wrestling.
Right.
There's a great writer on Grantland called The Masked Man. The Masked Man. His name's David Showalter, and he's their wrestling writer. He's a really funny, thoughtful guy. But he's written before about the idea that wrestling needs an off season. Because it gives the athletes an opportunity to kind of recharge. Because just imagine like the physical toll that it takes on these guys. They're not just working the one or two nights a week they're on TV.
No.
They're working three or four house shows every week. I mean, they basically have 2 days off, and they're working for five other nights in, you know, and it's the equivalent of like playing football every night for five nights a week, basically.
If you played football on Broadway.
Right, yeah, if you played football on Broadway. So there's no off season, and both as from a health perspective, but also from a storytelling perspective, it means that you don't have the opportunity to have like a hard stop and reboot. You build and you build and you build up to WrestleMania, and then there's the big dramatic climax, and the next day you have to just keep going. You have to come up with something new and keep going. So you're always sort of seeding or sowing the seeds of whatever the next story is while you're resolving the last one. And in that sense, its closest analog really is like a daily soap opera or a novella or something like that, where it's just a perpetual motion machine. And it's not about, you know, getting from point A to point B. It's about getting from point A to point B to point C to point D. Like, it's about continually moving forward to the point where, you know, 3 or 4 months could pass and, you know, it's an unrecognizable landscape. But I agree that I think that it's probably the closest thing to a successful dramatic portrayal of sports, because the reason it works and the reason people care about it, even decades after everyone acknowledged that it was scripted, is that it understands what people get excited about in a sort of primal and emotional way about following sports.
Yeah.
But it can actually, as opposed to us just hoping that the NBA finals are going to play out in a dramatic way, they can ensure that that happens and play with your expectations and make sure that the good guy wins in the most dramatic way fashionable or loses in the most heartbreaking way fashionable. So I'm with you, Rusty. I mean, I think if you're looking for an example of a dramatic sports series, that's really
the
only successful one I can think of.
Even Friday Night Lights, the first season is incredible.
It's perfect.
It's really perfect. But that second season, man,
it's rocky.
They start going in some crazy ways, like I Know What You Did Last Summer and stuff, right? And I mean, that's really hard to watch.
Because it was clear when they started that second season, they didn't expect it. They thought they were writing one perfect season. It was going to be the freaks and geeks of sports shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way that season one concluded was like, perfect. Mm-hmm. Like this, it was open-ended enough, but gave you enough of a finality for this to just be a self-contained thing. Season two took about 12 episodes to course correct. And then season three through the end is really good.
Yeah, no, season three, they got back on track and they were able to do it. And so I think that's part of it, though, is that it's hard to maintain your focus when a sports season is short. It doesn't go on and on and on.
Kids graduate.
Things happen. And
Tim Riggins was already 27.
And players change teams. And
Riggins right now in True Detective, I think he's 34. And Friday Night Lights, he was a high school senior for four seasons.
Yeah.
It was absurd. So you're just, those are always built-in struggles that any show like that's going to deal with. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that you could always, we can tie it back into segment one, no matter how good a scripted sports show is, the real thing still exists.
Right.
And that's where we tend to go. We watch sports the way we would watch these other things. And to script outcomes that are better than the natural spontaneity of sports, you're always going to fall short of that. And that's kind of where we landed with this. Mm. The DeAndre Jordan saga couldn't be scripted. Mm-hmm. It would be too absurd. You're watching that in a show, you'd be like, this is dumb. This is a dumb episode of Ballers, click. But no, it really happened in real life.
Right.
So I guess that's where we land with this sports TV show. But we're going to talk about sports movies after the break here. And sports movies have a much longer track record of success. So we're going to get into some of our favorites here on Can't Wait.